Good afternoon, everybody. It's great to not be in an empty room with just Karen and I. We had some thoughts that we enjoy talking to one another, but we're really thrilled that you are all here as well. So my name is Kate Smith, and I'm one of the authors of this work, but only one. I'm a researcher at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and I'm a qualitative researcher, a sociologist, who's pretty new to CBPR and community-engaged research. My colleague who will be presenting with me today is Karen Calhoun. She is affiliated with the St. John Providence Health System, as well as the Michigan Institute for Clinical and Health Research at the University of Michigan. We also have our colleague Suzanne Grebe in the audience, who is with the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. And then there are also two other authors on this work, Darius Tandon from Northwestern University Department of Medical Social Sciences, and Milton Eder, who's at the University of Minnesota Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. Now, what we all have in common is that we serve on the editorial board for the journal, the CBPR journal, Progress in Community Health Partnerships, Research, Education, and Action. And Karen and I are going to present our some insight that we have from, and hopefully some helpful tips for getting good qualitative CBPR work visible within the academic peer-reviewed literature. We have no financial relationships to disclose. So I'm going to turn it over to Karen for now.
Good afternoon, everyone. Our paper, as Kate mentioned, our journal is pretty much solely dedicated to promoting CBPR. And what we've noticed is an increasing amount of qualitative CBPR work that's coming before us to be published. And this is great news, but at the same time, we've also noticed variances in skill levels of those submitting the work. So as a result of that, a team of us at the journal got together and put together our ideas on best practices to support qualitative CBPR writing for peer review publication. So our presentation today highlights the paper that'll be published next year. The goals are pretty, explicit: to discuss the contributions of qualitative methods while utilizing a CBPR framework, the challenges to disseminating qualitative CBPR efforts in scientific literature, and strategies to enhance dissemination of this work. The contributions to CBPR qualitative research from a community perspective, partners, both community and academic, include scientific rigor in the research process that's often community-based. There's a blending of academic and community practices to contextualize research in community settings, facilitating broader community engagement, which may not be possible in other types of efforts, for example, those that are more statistically heavy or number-crunching methodologies, and finally, telling the story.
We thought that we would have Karen speak to the contributions of qualitative methods from a community perspective, and I would briefly give some insight into what I've learned about the contributions of CBPR for good qualitative research. And in fact, I think oftentimes adopting CBPR principles helps qualitative researchers actually do the work that we know we're supposed to be doing and want to be doing and do it well. So one of the ways is that if we're doing CBPR and we're embracing CBPR principles right from the get-go, we will be doing research that on issues that actually matter to people. And we'll be doing research, hopefully, in ways that actually make sense, both to while you're doing the research, but also in terms of making sense in having findings that will be applicable and implementable when you're done. So in qualitative research, we often think about different standards for what makes a how do you assess what's a good study? So instead of thinking about reliability and validity and objectivity and reducing bias, we tend to think instead of things like credibility and confirmability, and those principles are things that, again, adopting a CBPR approach can just make that achievable. So credibility is enhanced through community partnerships where there's contributions to development of the research question, to thinking about how to enact research, to thinking all the way through to data collection, designing the sample, thinking about analysis. So credibility is a huge aspect. And then confirmability, when we think about the insider perspective, so using, you know, in qualitative research, we talk about the EMIC perspective, that what we get in qualitative research is we embrace and we highlight the perspective of the insider. And, you know, in CBPR research, that, you know, that's very consistent with the idea of a partnership and embracing and highlighting the perspective of community partners, particularly in the analytic process. And so that all sounds great. It's really challenging to actually disseminate this work that we think is highly important within the standard academic scientific literature. And why is that? Because what we do oftentimes doesn't fit very well with the way that journals are used to seeing science presented. And so we're trying to put round research into a square journal hole. And I think what we're suggesting is that it's probably more feasible to actually work with the standard structure, see how we can make it where as much as possible rather than trying to break the mold with each paper that we write. Some of the particular challenges is that for lots of the, again, this is limited to the scientific literature, but the journals where, you know, it will really be impactful to write, knowledge about CBPR can't be assumed. You know, people, this will be novel to a lot of the reviewers, to a lot of the readers. Put on top of that knowledge about qualitative methods can't be assumed. And you could actually take up at least 3,000 words just talking about these two things without actually getting to your study. It's likely that there will be pressure to add numbers to show that this is important by talking in numeric terms, which from a qualitative perspective can oftentimes be really challenging. And at the same time, with our rich descriptive data, particularly when we're describing and hopefully including community partners as part of the authorship team, how do we give the rich descriptive data that makes our research powerful without potentially risking threats to anonymity and confidentiality through the data collection process? So that's the challenges that we face. And now I'm going to hand back over to Karen to talk about how we suggest to address that.
So the partnership is obviously a very critical part of community engaged in CBPR, and viability of the partnership is significant. And thus, the partnership should be described throughout the paper as appropriate. Describing the partnership from conception to its current functions, how it works, the roles of both community and academic partners should be clearly described throughout the paper, and how the partnership contributes to research, for example, on innovation and community priorities, that all should be highlighted. So our paper includes a great chart that can be used as a checklist to review and assess content included in the write-up. So starting with the information about the partnership, the next few slides highlight that chart by category. The introduction should include the research questions, how it's addressed, or contextualized within community priorities. The role of theory and the research, limitations of traditional research with this topic, and how this research advances the field, with the field encompassing many things dependent upon what the effort and the research is about, such as community development, community health, advancing science and research, and partnership development and sustainability. Kate will close us out with talking about methods and results and some lasting comments.
So moving on to the methods, what do we need to see in the paper? What should partnership teams be thinking about in terms of what to include in the methods and what to highlight in the methods? And we feel that it's we think these are highlights. So talking about ethical approval and whether that's been obtained from community as well as academic bodies. So it's very, you're likely to get a paper sent back to you if you don't talk about IRB approval from an academic institution. We feel that it should be becoming standard, that you're also reporting what review this has had from any community organizations. It's important to think about and to present how sampling was done, what are the sampling principles that were applied. In qualitative research, there are different approaches that we take to sampling than in quantitative methods, and that should be outlined in the paper. How were participants recruited, and particularly, were the community organizations and partners involved, if at all, in that recruitment process? Who was part of the analytic team, and that where that might be more sort of obvious or assumed in a traditional academic paper, it's really important for the reviewers and the audience to assess the standard and the rigor of a CBPR paper to know who was involved in this process and how did the analytic work, and that applies also to thinking about a code book, which is very typical for qualitative research, and just in general thinking about being very clear about laying out the methodological process. All the different components of it, and then also weaving in and making it clear who was involved in the process, who led the process, and how. Okay, moving on to results and finding and discussion, and the reason that I put all of these together is actually for a lot of qualitative work, that's the way that it works most easily. It's often not very easy to tease apart the results section from the discussion section. Even though for different journal types, you may have to do that. So how do you go about describing participants well while maintaining confidentiality? I've already talked about that. Thinking about how the analytic categories and interpretations stem logically from the research question, and how do you demonstrate that? Are you able to summarize and place the results within the context of the pertinent literature? We see papers quite often that are that seem a little bit separated or from extensive bodies of work that have come before them. So they may describe very well the meaning of this in the particular context, but in order for the scientific literature to be built and enhanced, we need to be tying the work that we're doing now to what's been done before, as well as identifying where it points us to for the future. And that's the idea of the implications of the study. So what are the implications of the study for this particular community, but also within the scientific literature, it's really important to also think through what are the implications for the broader community. Who else might, to point to ways that other communities might actually make use of the findings. And then also not to oversell what you have. So what are the limitations? All studies have limitations. Thinking those through. And then we would ask, and we think it's really important, for papers to outline the value added of utilizing a community academic partnership, and not to forget within the scientific dissemination to describe the other ways in which this research is being disseminated to community, policymakers, etc. So in sum then, Ultimately, we think that CBPR and qualitative research are natural partners. We think that these are principles, they're approaches to doing research that are just so complementary. They're distinct and yet synergistic approaches. And these are some of the key ways and thoughts that we want to. So we think it's difficult to do it well. We particularly think it's difficult to do it well in 3,000 words or less to audiences that are not particularly familiar with the way that we do work, but these are the reasons why we should continue to strive to do it. We, as CBPR researchers, as qualitative researchers, we all value and prioritize the perspective of the research, and we value deep understanding of the lived experience. We recognize and embrace the idea that it matters who conducts the research, so we're not trying to say that anybody could do this research. And that it's a that you know someone else could come in and do this research the same. We know that it matters. We know that it's about it's about relationships. It's about building trust. It's about working together. We're people that can deal with messy the world being messy and our research lives being messy. If you can't, you're probably doing the wrong kind of research to be doing CBPR or qualitative research. Find an easier way to make a buck. And finally, what we're doing most of the time is asking the how and why questions that are so important to impactful and sustainable interventions. So thank you very much. We'd be happy to take questions. I think that no, is I certainly haven't, and I'm looking to Suzanne. No, and I think that that's. I'm sorry. Oh, they're repeating the question. Have we looked at journals that have actually made modifications to deal with the fact that this is different kind of research and that the rigor of the research has to be assessed in other ways. And we haven't, and I think that's a great point. And thinking about and another thing that might be really useful to do would be to actually outline what journals have made modifications and also make recommendations for other things that would be really useful.
They were very specific about you have to describe the physical setting, mm-hmm. you have to describe, so it was very different to novel, and,
yeah.
and I know some people were up in arms about it because they had to cut other sections of their paper to talk about setting mm-hmm. and context.
Yeah. I think, and those of us who are associate editors can chime in, but I know we do contextualize in our review of manuscripts that come to us. So, you know, as Kate said, it's not an easy process even, or a simple process for the review, and it's very... it's not a cookie cutter approach, so that contextualizing really is a matter of pointing out the key factors or the key issues that are related to that research that best brings out the important aspects of it. Yes.
With the word limit, obviously, but
yeah.
kind of allowing for some other ways.
again, I think it's probably somewhat related to the individual review of your manuscript. And so the reviewers kind of and the associate editors get together and figure out which ways can best strengthen, you know, the presentation and pulling out other information. So I think, I don't know, Kate, I'll let you chime in on that one. That's what it sounds like to me.
Sure. And I, as somebody who teaches qualitative methods, I tell my students, and I think like that's where the quotes, that's how people know whether what you're saying makes any sense, right? And so sacrificing, you know, lots rich data is really tough. So I commend you for the use of tables, and I think it's something that is a trick to getting around really tight word limits. And not all journals, some journals count the words in tables, which is a real pain and doesn't work at all. But I think as a qualitative community, we also have to then get used to, because it's usually that we've sort of entwined our interpretation and the data together, and the tables don't do that quite. So, but I think that's the reality of what you have to do to stick to clinical length journals and do good qualitative write-ups, particularly when you've got all the context and the engagement piece that has to be there, just has to be there.